Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now we present to our listening audience the joy for your earbuds. The longest hour show in hockey history. Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. Good afternoon.
Hello.
How's everything going?
Fantastic. I'm excited because we have a special guest in the studio today.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, right here, live, sort of, in the studio is Manti Te'o's girlfriend. And she actually bears a striking resemblance to your old high school girlfriend.
Yeah, I think I dated her mom for 4 years in my college.
So there's a family career. Resemblance.
Yes.
I see. Yeah,
that is just still one of the weirdest stories I have heard in a long time.
Yeah, it's certainly an odd story, and I think it's one of those kind of stories that only could happen in this day and age, because 10 years ago, before social networking, I don't know that something like that would have happened. But
I don't know about that, because I remember the nerdy kid in college who was dating his girl from high school, but she never came up to visit him up in Central Michigan.
True.
University. And every week he came, why are you going home this weekend? There's a big party, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, I want to go see my girlfriend. Oh, your girlfriend that no one has seen, and you've come from a small high school that no one else, and of all the 17,000 that go to Central Michigan, come from your high school, so we have no proof that you actually have this girlfriend.
True. But that instance is a nerdy kid that nobody knows. This is a major star in a nationally recognized college sport.
Well, yeah, I know. It does seem pretty
but
crazy.
I understand. There was a lot of talk after the story broke that people were like, well, how did that not come out? How did no one ask and confirm that this person existed? But that's really crass if somebody says their girlfriend just died, if you walk up to them and go, so, is she real? So, I kind of, it's a very odd story, but I kind of understand why the quote-unquote obvious questions weren't asked when we thought perhaps they should have been. So, but anyway, yes.
True enough.
We have Manti's girlfriend here in the studio. It's very nice.
In a way, I kind of feel the same way with a lot of our Iceman fans who at the beginning of the season, I threw the question out there, where's this team going to end up? And a lot of people... not a lot, but there's some that said championship, playoffs, or nothing.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. The only thing they had to base that on was an Iceman jersey.
Yeah.
And that the fact that that's their team. So this whole Manti Te'o made-up girlfriend is kind of like the Evansville Iceman
made-up championship.
Yeah, deep playoff hopes for for an expansion team joining a brand-new league that is obviously better. The ECHL is better than the CHL.
Yeah.
I've seen it with my own eyes. I didn't believe it. I thought it was AA was equivalent. I'm not saying there isn't good players in the CHL. There's a lot of good players, and they're signed to really decent contracts. But throughout the whole league, yeah, the E is better.
Well, and I think a lot of it is just it's more depth. I think the CHL, the top players in the CHL are in general pretty comparable to the top players in the ECHL. But where CHL teams have one line of guys like that, ECHL teams have three lines of guys like that.
Last Wednesday night, we'll start a wrap-up from there against the Comets. Pretty excited former Leaf prospect. I'm glad being a Maple Leaf fan has prepared me for watching quality players in the ECHL, because that seems to be the extent of our development is guys ending up in the ECHL. But Luca Caputi, former Leaf, we traded for him, and he was the big prospect in the trade a couple of years ago, and I get to watch him play for Fort Wayne. It was a little disappointing. I did tweet him and say, hey, it was pretty awesome getting to watch you in Evansville. He didn't respond. I'm guessing for his career, his goal wasn't to be playing in the ECHL in the beautiful Ford Center.
Probably not real happy to be here as much as the Ford Center is wonderful and the Comets are a destination team in this level. I don't think that's exactly where his goal is.
No, not even to play in the house that Vol built.
No. That was a good game for the Comets, though. That game Wednesday, Fort Wayne wins 1-0. It was a very, just like the Wednesday before it, a very quiet kind of non-division feel to it. Again, both teams kind of played a road game style, and it was scoreless into the third period, and then the Comets got a game winner on kind of a funky bounce, just a spin-around shot from the hash marks along the boards, and Karpovich was squared up to the shot, but it bounces off of his stick and between his legs and into the net, and sometimes that's how you win or lose a game like that, when it seems like the pretty goals aren't going to happen. You got to win by a fluky bounce or a garbage goal, and that's what the Comets benefited from.
I thought the Icemen were the better team for 50 minutes in that game. They just ran into a hot goaltender.
Yeah.
And they peppered them, and I think one of the things you can see where they knew they were going up against a hot goaltender were how many shots hit the glass. You start, the goalie's saving everything, so you're really starting to pull off the perfect shot, trying to pick the corners, and you miss the corners. But we had 3-on-2 rushes. We had great setups. We were splattering that glass all over the place. And then you take a couple of penalties, and that's all they got to do is put one in, and that's what happened. So
yeah.
I wasn't surprised once we went on the shorthanded that we were going to lose in that third period.
Yeah. Kenny Ryder played a good game, and that is a good goalie right there. He's not going to stay at this level for too terribly long in his career because he's going to move up. They made 36 saves to earn the shutout, and I don't know that he necessarily was forced to make any special saves. There was a whole lot of early on trying to beat the logo off of his jersey, and then we converted to trying to pick the corners, like you said.
Yeah, we hit a lot of glass.
Yeah. So that's one of those things. Sometimes you just run into a hot goalie, and I think our best scoring chance that entire game was in the first minute when Dylan Clark hit a post, and that was kind of a sign of things to come. It was going to be post or bust, and it was a whole lot of bust.
A lot of bust, yep.
But it's tough. That was the fourth straight time at home that we had allowed only one goal. The problem was we didn't score any after scoring 13 in the three home games before that. So that's a tough one to swallow, but that's the way it goes when you've got two teams that may be a little short on talent at this level, that you're going to have some of those defensive kind of styles, and you're going to have 1-0 and 2-1 kind of games. And sometimes you win them, sometimes you lose them.
Yep.
So moved on from there to Friday, and it was a completely different kind of game, a very freewheeling, offensive, loose kind of game, and the Icemen win 4-3 in overtime over the Kalamazoo Wings. Took a 3-1 lead, but Kalamazoo came back to tie it, and we thought maybe we wouldn't even make it to overtime because with 5:44 left in the game, Trent Vogelhuber took a double minor for high sticking, but the Icemen did kill it off. So ended up going to overtime. It was the first time this season we've had an overtime game at home. And the Icemen got a power play 1 minute into the period. So we got to see some 4-on-3 hockey.
Yeah,
which,
there's
boy,
a lot
that's
of room.
Fun, isn't it?
Yep.
A lot of room to work with and a lot of back and forth. And with 12 seconds left in the power play, we get the game-winning goal, which minor point to make is last year in the CHL, the power play would have been over because they did the half-length penalties in overtime. So that power play would have been long gone, but in the ECHL, they do normal two-minute minors in overtime. So 12 seconds left. Got a chance up at the top of the circle. Todd Robinson took a shot. Kevin Baker redirected it. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes questions about that because originally everybody thought Todd scored it. Well, then the referee signaled that Baker tipped it, so we changed to Baker. Then on video review, they couldn't find the tip, so they changed it to award the goal to Todd. And then when Chad Burley and Chris Phillips went down to the locker room, they talked to Baker, and he said, yeah, I did tip it. So that the awarding of that goal changed four times in a span of about 15 minutes.
Yep, that's the work that's done behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's like a duck paddling on water, all the the legs moving underneath the surface. But the final decision on that was Kevin Baker gets the goal, Todd Robinson gets the first assist. So Todd ended up with three assists in that game. And, it was a fun game to watch. It was one of those kind of physical. That felt more like a division game, unlike the game against Fort Wayne. So, interesting thing to note in that game, Aaron Jens would have had a Gordie Howe hat trick. He had a goal and an assist, and he tried to fight to complete the Gordie trick, but the player that he wanted to fight turtled, so Aaron only got 2 minutes for roughing. So, foiled in his attempt to get a Gordie trick, but he played well and was the number one star in that game, and I think certainly deserved it. So, good for him. The unfortunate thing about that game is we thought that was going to mark the Evansville return of Brian Bisek. But
we promoted it big time right here on this radio station.
But unfortunately, that has been postponed because last week Bisek was in a one-car accident due to icy road conditions up in Michigan. And he had no broken bones or internal damage but did need 8 staples in his head. Thankfully, he's not necessarily expected to miss a whole lot of time. But
maybe he should have moved to Arizona.
There's no ice there.
He lost his northern driving skills.
No kidding, yeah. So I did talk on Facebook to his fiancée, Allie, and she said he was really disappointed. He was looking forward to coming back. So the Iceman fans who wanted to see him back weren't the only ones who were disappointed.
I was really disappointed as well. I really wanted to see that matchup.
Yeah, but the good thing is he will be here, we think. 2 more times. The Icemen do play Kalamazoo at home twice in March on both Saturdays, on March 16th and then the next week, March 23rd, which is the regular season home finale. So there will be a couple more chances, should he be healthy and still rostered, to see Mr. Bisek back in action in Evansville. But it was unfortunate. I think a lot of people were looking forward to that, Bisek included. But thankfully, like I said, it sounds like it won't be a terribly long-term deal. Just got to give the old noggin a little time to heal up, and he'll be back at it. So hopefully by March we'll see him here a couple times and give him a warm welcome back to town. I think that's one of those deals where he will not be met with heckling or anything. I think the fans will genuinely be happy to see him back. And
the fans, maybe.
The fans, maybe. It sounded like based on the amusement park. Yeah, yeah, Patafi didn't sound particularly thrilled that he would be coming back.
And my guess is that he is the spokesperson for Iceman HQ in that. I don't think he's the lone renegade in that thought.
Yeah.
So. And what happens behind closed doors, that's why you play the games, is you get to see just how all those feelings work. So
Very much so.
And obviously we see the same thing with Nathan Moon coming to the Evansville Iceman, and he has a rough time against Cincinnati every time they play.
Yeah. So, it will be interesting to see the dynamic between Bisek and especially the players that were here last season, see how he reacts around Beaulieu and Todd Robinson and Matt Jens if he's back by then. So, something to look forward to for March.
I just have to share a quick story along those hockey lines about feeling betrayed when a player signs with your team and then leaves that team. And I remember being up in Michigan when Marian Hossa won the Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, and all of my Detroit Red Wing family members all just complaining, he's a turncoat, he's a Benedict Arnold, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what about the fact that he played for the Pittsburgh Penguins? They actually traded first-round picks and prospects for his rights, and then after they lost to Detroit in the Stanley Cup, he left and signed a 1-year deal with the Red Wings. You guys weren't calling him a betrayer and a turncoat then.
It's all about perspective.
It is all about perspective, and yes, exactly. And perspective starts from your team and goes out from there. And that kind of quieted the family party at that time.
Yeah, well, I think
facts. Darn facts.
Yeah, there's no room for those. I think deals like that, though, and just the business of players moving from place to place over the course of their careers, people have a very team-centric perspective. You know, it everything revolves around their favorite team. But in general, I think a lot of fans have trouble with perspective in general, because you know,
we all do.
You know, fan is short for fanatic.
Exactly.
And there's a reason why that term is applicable, because a lot of people have trouble separating emotion from things that shouldn't necessarily be judged or decided by emotion. So that's just part of the game, though. That's why fans are fun, because the emotion is what makes sports what they are. Because if it was just business, then it'd be like playing a computer game where you don't really have any emotional tie. So
I've had some emotional ties to
some broken keyboards.
Some Stanley Cup runs on NHL 2K10 or 11 or whatever else. Saturday night,
Iceman against Toledo, and another close game like the Wednesday game, and the Iceman end up losing 2-1. Really good crowd, 6,696. It was a really good game, and the crowd was into it. It was a cool atmosphere. kind of a chippy divisional game where it was physical and said could have gone either way, and Toledo ended up on top. The biggest issue in that game was early in the second period, Aaron Jens got hit hard and high by Cody Lample. And initially when it happened, I wasn't sure if it was a dirty hit, but when I saw the replay, I'm pretty sure that he did get his elbow up higher than it should have been. The hit was not penalized. Right after the hit, when Aaron stayed down on the ice, Matt Shepke answered and fought Lample. Wrestled Lample. It wasn't much of a fight. They kind of just wrestled for a while, and then Shepke scored the takedown. But Jens ended up with a broken nose and a concussion, or as he said online, a conky. I've never heard that before. I thought that was a funny term. But no
wasn't
idea.
Wasn't that the robot on the Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Conky?
Conky.
Boy, that's going way back.
Well,
I don't remember.
Way back for you. That
that's
didn't
true,
seem
yeah.
So far back.
I was
me.
About five when that was on.
Shut it.
yeah. Hey, I got more gray hair than you, though, so.
That's just because mine's cut short.
Yeah.
And you can't see my chest hair.
Yeah. Well.
Exactly. It just travels south, the gray hairs. It's
not
scary.
Boy,
but anyways.
I don't like where this topic's going.
No.
Let's get back to hockey.
I've got another topic I need to address, too, that's
going
to be difficult
for much
of our audience to listen to. It involves goaltenders and showers and nakedness.
Oh.
But I'll save that teaser for after the next segment.
Okay, well then. All right, so, wow.
The conky.
I don't know where. Yeah, the conky. I did want to say kudos to Shepke for answering and fighting Lample. There was some talk on the Asylum about, well, Shepke didn't get a decisive win, so Cody or somebody else should have gone out there and beat the guy's brains in. But I think...
Doesn't matter. First guy,
right.
You got to get there.
First guy, you get there, you take care of it, and it's over. Maybe if Shepke just gets destroyed in the fight, maybe someone else needs to take care of business.
Nah, first guy's got to get
there.
First
guy, that's it. You answer, you send the message, and I think people are like, well, the guy needed to get his butt kicked. Well... Maybe he did deserve to get his butt kicked, but it's an over situation. It's done. The score is settled once Shepke fights him. For Cody or someone else to come out and fight the same guy to try to send the same message is disrespectful to Shepke in basically saying, well, what you did wasn't good enough.
Yep.
And that's part of the code, the unwritten rules that we've talked about of physicality and fighting in hockey. And while it's not... something written down, that's just how it is. That once the guy answers, that's done. The issue is settled. It's over with. Whether fans really think enough retribution was dealt or not. So kudos to Shepke, and hopefully that issue is over, and also hopefully Aaron is not out too terribly long. But with concussions, you never know. It could be a deal where he's out for the 7 days and he's symptom-free and he's back, and it could be one of those things that lingers on for a while. We'll just wait and see.
It's a shame, too. You alluded to it last week about how well he was playing. Last week or 2 weeks ago that he was really carrying the puck well. He came back from the broken wrist and looked tons better, tons of confidence, and he's only been playing better. He's scoring goals like crazy now.
Yeah.
Chad Burley tries to take the first one away. He's successful in that. he just responds. He goes on the road. He gets it, and I think he's got 3 goals now.
Yeah, and he's got 9 points in 9 games in January, so he's a point-a-game player. Before that, he only had 3 points in his first 19 games. So the proof's in the pudding. He's been a lot better player lately, and hopefully he's not out for long, and hopefully, however long he is out, doesn't completely derail the momentum he had. But it's always tricky with concussions because guys may be a little gun-shy when they get back. They may not want to dig in the corners. They may not want to deliver or take that big hit. And it can change the way you play the game if you're worried about getting your bell rung again. So we'll see how long he's out and how his play changes when he comes back, especially a guy like him where the physical aspect is part of his game. It's hopefully it doesn't have a bad effect, but it very well could. So time will tell. A couple other things in that game on Saturday that I thought were worth mentioning. Late in the second period, the Icemen were shorthanded. Todd Robinson gets the puck. He's skating out through the neutral zone. When the lights went out, very odd situation. and it was just momentarily the lights went out for maybe a second or two,
wow.
But it was long enough that the officials had to blow the play dead, and it negated a pretty good scoring chance. But I heard some people talking about, well, I could still see the players. Why couldn't they just keep playing?
No. Safety.
Safety. And while you can see the players and the player who has the puck can see it, you got to think about the goalie who's trying to stop that puck, and there's no way. As soon as the lights go out, you got to blow it dead.
Black puck in an all-darkened building. It does not make for good fun times.
No, so that's just one of those fluky things. I don't know what happened. I don't know why the lights went out, because it was just the house lights. It wasn't the lights in the press box stayed on, the lights in the concourses stayed on. Something happened to where a switch got flipped for a split second, but odd. One of those things, hopefully you don't see it again, but it kind of hurt the Iceman, because I don't know that it was necessarily going to be a goal, but it was a decent enough scoring chance that you've got an opportunity to make something happen shorthanded, and the lights go out. So, weird. But down the stretch in that game, in the final minute, it was crazy when the Icemen were down 2-1. Matt Shepke had a shot with 30, 40 seconds left in the game. Got a piece of the goalie and behind him, and it got inches from the goal line, but the defense cleared it. So it was a wild finish. It was very tense, and unfortunately we weren't able to pull even. But that was a close and fun game to watch, and I'll take losing 2-1 like that over some of the ugly losses we've had this year. You're not going to win them all, and if you're going to lose in that way, there's no shame in it. That was a good game. The team played well. The officiating, on the other hand, I saw some really poor officiating this weekend at Swander when I saw you work a peewee game.
Exactly.
But Saturday's officiating in the Iceman game was not much better, because at the end of the game, Brian Patafi, Mr. Amusement Park guest,
yes,
got himself
friend of the radio show.
Yes, got himself a game misconduct for abuse of officials, verbal, not physical. He was mad at the linesman, and I haven't checked the video to see if there's truth to this, but it's such a specific story, I gotta believe Patafi is telling the truth. He said that there in the final minute of that game, when the Icemen were trying to score and even the score, and we had the empty net, so it was 6-on-5. Apparently, at one point during that skirmish, Toledo sent an extra player off the bench, and they would have had too many men on the ice had the guy been allowed to go out there and then the penalty be called. But instead of letting him go out there, the linesman, who was the back linesman in front of the Iceman bench, actually yelled at the walleye player, told him, "You got too many, get back on the bench." And Patafi lost it. He was irate about the fact that rather than let the play happen and then penalize the guy as it should have been, instead, the linesman favored the walleye by warning him, basically, instead of just letting it happen and calling the penalty. So that was what Patafi was not happy about. And as a result, he was chirping the linesman something fierce after the final buzzer. So he got himself a game misconduct. And
one of the first game misconducts for a non-coaching staff that I have heard in a long... I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I can't think of one that we've ever had. I know it happens every once in a while, but yeah, it's pretty rare.
Does it?
Well, I'm sure it does. The funny thing is, though, he's not even in LeagueStat, the stats software that the league uses. He's not in there.
Uh-huh.
So they had to just charge the game misconduct to the bench. Because when you have a misconduct to the bench, you can select the coach or other. So they had to select other. So maybe he could blame it on Smoke. Just claim that it wasn't him. I didn't do it. I didn't say anything. It was Smoke. He did it.
Well, and then it just begs to... So does he not work the next game?
I don't know. I'm not sure how that works for off-ice personnel. I don't know if it's because it was at the end of the game he does have to sit out the next game, or if it's
players fined.
I would imagine there will be a fine. It might be like with the players where you have to accumulate so many of them before you actually get suspended. But it could be different because it was at the end of the game. So I don't know.
Well,
that's something to ask
him. It also is different because he's not a player.
Right.
It's an interesting situation. My take on it, that is a tough call. It's a tough call for a linesman. The linesman call one penalty. It's the only thing that they can call, and that's too many men. And that is a tough call. I called it once in an AHA game years ago at Swander, and it's a tough call because not only you're not supposed to, you're out there to call offsides and icings.
Yeah.
And that is just kind of an additional help. And when I called it, I had to call it because there was just too many guys and they had the rush. But you kind of feel like you're undermining the referee by making a call. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you don't know what I'm talking about because you've never done it.
Well, you're in that position and generally you want to give the team the benefit of the doubt. If there's four guys in front of the bench, two are coming, two are going, and the puck squirts through there and hits somebody in the skate, a lot of times you'll let it go, even though
you're
by
allowed
the book.
To because it no, but the book is inadvertent touch doesn't
count.
Right,
that's true. Yeah, they have to purposely play the puck. And, I think, though, in general, just you don't want to make that call.
No. So, and if that extra guy wasn't factoring in, I can see the thought process behind the linesman saying, just get off the ice so that we...
So we can keep this going.
Yes.
And I don't know. I haven't looked at the video. I don't know what the situation was. If we had the puck down in the zone and he's hopping off the bench in the neutral zone and gets 3 feet from the bench and the linesman sees it and goes, hey, no, back on the bench. I can understand that. But I can also understand why in the heat of the moment Patafi got upset about it.
I understand that too, but abuse is abuse, and there's no place for it. And that's a great call by the referee because obviously you said that it was directed at the linesman.
Yeah.
So the referee isn't even hearing any of this. He overhears it or he gets referred, it's told to it. And that's a good job by the referee. Now, the referee and the linesman may have had a really long discussion in the ref locker room that says, man, if they've got six, you got to call it.
Yeah.
But you cannot abuse officials. You cannot do it. There is never an excuse. There is no, as some knucklehead posted on the Facebook Asylum, rightfully so. That was you, by the way.
Yeah.
To let the official have it. You can't do it. You send videotape. You send it to the league officials that supervise officials, and you handle it that way because it didn't change the outcome of the game, and all it did was get Patafi in trouble and a fine, which is the correct thing. There's checks and balances for all of these things.
Right, and my rightfully so is that he was rightfully upset.
Yes.
Not that there's no situation. You can't be cursing and yelling and dropping F-bombs at a referee.
Even
the
if
referee
he makes the worst call in the world, there's no excuse for it.
Well, and also, once the call is made, whether it's for you or against you, it's made.
Yep.
There's no going back. So
that is in the rule book.
No level of cursing at the linesman or referee is going to change anything. So it's not going to do anything but make things worse if you're yelling and screaming at the linesman. But, it was rightfully so that Patafi was upset, at least to some extent. But, you can't let your emotions take over to the point where you just absolutely go off and fly off the handle. But
that's what social media is for.
exactly. He could tweet about it later.
Yes.
And then it's in writing and he gets fined instead, one way or the other. But, something else about Saturdays, well, Friday and Saturday, both days over the weekend, Patrick Kennedy and Jason Dale continue to play defense. And particularly interesting, I thought, on Saturday, Dale was playing D when it was 5-on-5. He was playing Ford on the penalty kill. And then there were at times on 5-on-5 when he would actually play kind of a hybrid role. If there was a defensive, this happened several times on Saturday, we would have a faceoff in the defensive zone and Dylan Clark's line was out there. And as we talked about last week, Dylan Clark is the only regular center on this team that's been well under 50% on faceoffs. And Crom must have thought about that because there were three or four times on Saturday when you're in the D zone, Clark's line's out there, Dale is one of the defensemen on the ice, and Dale would actually take the faceoff and then immediately drop back and play D. So
awesome. I
kind
love
of
it.
An
yep.
very interesting situation. But because of injuries and everything, not only were Kennedy and Dale on D full-time in the games on Friday and Saturday, also on Saturday, at one point on the power play, our two defensemen were Jake Overmeyer and Patrick Kennedy. And nothing against those two, but I'm going to guess that there wasn't a whole lot of time spent in practice on Obi and Kennedy working the point on the power play. So that's just another way of telling how crazy this season's been as far as injuries and roster changes. But even Todd Robinson at one point in the third period on Saturday, the Todd Robinson who's minus 22, which is 807th out of 808 players in the league, took a couple of shifts at 5-on-5 on defense.
Wow.
So just a bizarre situation. This season has got so many interesting stories that provide backup for why this team is struggling and the total lack of continuity, and that's just the latest example.
Who's hot? Todd Robinson. I love the game. I love the way he's playing right now. He's a point-per-game player. He's got 36 points, 2 goals, 34 assists, and 35 games. The guy's fantastic. He really, really is.
Yeah, he's been playing really well lately. We talked about him last week, and this weekend was no exception. Like I said, he had 3 assists on Friday. So, and he's just... I think it's finally that he's starting to get healthy again, really. I think the knee is finally coming around to where he's back to the Todd Robinson of old.
And I also think adding a Kenny Baker to the right wing. Kevin. And some, I always
he's
think
not
of R2-D2.
R2-D2.
Kevin Baker, or sometimes you see Nathan Moon pop up there. You've seen Dylan Clark up there from time to time. But that additional talent is making a difference.
Very much so. Other hot, we already talked about Aaron Jens being a point-of-game guy in January. The other player that's hot, and we talked about him last week, but I want to talk about him again, Paul Karpowicz. He has had six starts in January, including the last five games in a row, and there's something to be said for the rhythm of playing every night when you know you're coming to the rink and you're the man. In January, he is 3-2-1. His goals against is .215, and his save percentage is up to .936.
That's awesome.
So if he keeps that up, he's going to raise some eyeballs, and this team's going to win some more games.
You see the development of the rookie goaltender. Mm-hmm. About 6 weeks ago, we had Patafi on the amusement park, and Dayton, it was when, was it when Dayton had just come in? Yeah, because Dayton played Friday night. It was back in December, and he was scheduled to play Saturday and then went up to Patafi right before the game and said, I've tweaked something, I can't go.
And they went with Karp.
And they went with Karp, and he played good, and Patafi kind of made a joke of, Karp plays his best when he doesn't realize he has to play. And he just goes out there, just kind of alluding to he's thinking about it too much.
Right.
And you see the development now where they're riding this guy, and he's playing solid hockey.
Yeah. Well, and they're, over time, the game just slows down. You get acclimated to the speed of it. And part of it is overthinking things. But in goal, especially, it's you just have to read and react. You can't, if you take time to think about it, it's too late. So, yeah, I think that level of comfort, and the game really slows down when you are playing on a regular basis, like the last five games in a row. When you have that goalie alternating rotation deal where you're playing a game, then sitting a game, then playing a game, then sitting a game, it's a little harder to get into that rhythm where you really are feeling it. But we've seen it the last few games. There's been times, every now and then he'll still give up a soft goal, but there's been some times lately, including on Friday, man, there was a stretch in the second period where he was just in a zone, and he was making saves he had no business making. So it's been fun to see how he's come along, and it's going to be interesting to see whenever Curtis McElhinney gets healthy and Paul Dayton comes back down and Ross MacKinnon goes back to the SPHL, what's going to happen with the goalie rotation? Will Crom, having seen how well Karpowicz plays when he's the man, kind of go to a little more weighted role toward him and Dayton be more of a backup? I don't know. It's going to be something to see, because you don't necessarily want to have Dayton just sitting on the bench, but at the same time, if Karpowicz is playing really well and giving you a chance to win every night, how do you go away from him?
Yeah, I agree. But then I also get excited about next year. Do we work out a contract? Is Karpowicz coming back next year? So we'll have him for minimum 30 games, depending on what we get from whatever affiliate we have.
Right.
But is he going to be in the fold until he's a veteran?
Right. And it's going to determine what happened. That's going to be determined by what happens in Peoria. Because the Blues have their two guys. They got Yaroslav Halak and Brian Elliott, and I don't think either one of them are going anywhere.
But Elliott got chased last night.
No, Halak did. Elliott came in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the other way.
It was Monday night.
Oh, that's right. You are correct, because this is Wednesday.
But, yeah, they've got their two guys in the NHL. So then the question is, what do they do in Peoria? They've got Jake Allen, who's a blue-chip prospect, and he's getting most of the starts in Peoria right now. He's sharing time with, I can't think of the guy's name, McKenna, I think is his name, Mike McKenna. And he's a kind of a journeyman veteran. So the question is, do they keep McKenna around in order to be the backup to Allen and let Allen get most of the work? Or will they be comfortable enough with Karpowicz to let McKenna go and then call Karpowicz up? But with a young goalie like that, part of it is just wanting him to get work. So do you want to call him up and then have him only play 20 games over the course of a 70-game season? That's going to be an organizational decision, and the Icemen really probably won't have much of a say in it. It's just going to be the Blues and Rivermen are going to work it out, and then whatever they decide, we get. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year with the goalie situation. But I think we're starting to see now why Karpowicz was a drafted NHL player, because he's certainly got the goods. It's just a matter of refining it and getting used to the game.
Our next segment, our best segment, because it's 4 minutes, you don't have to listen to us yammer on. Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
Ooh, a little extra stank on it this
week. Yeah, I don't know. That was that second cup of coffee or something I had.
This is a quick little intro for this one. This is in honor of Mr. Bisek's accident caused by ice on the road. This is the song that I used to play during warm-ups at Swander. It's by a Toronto-based rock band called Danko Jones, which is actually the lead singer's name, Danko Jones, too. Who does he think he is? Bon Jovi? Named the band after himself?
Yes, so.
Man, what an ego. This is Danko Jones, Soul on Ice.
When the sun sets, my heart is hard and my blood is cold. From getting kicked in the teeth, I'm too young to feel so old. But don't get me wrong, this ain't a cry for help. If you wanna test me, you'll hurt yourself. I got a soul on ice, frozen to the bone. I got a soul on ice, it's so cold, man, it's so cold. Yeah. Keep your distance and watch your step. The closer you are, the further I get. If you wanna test me, you'll hurt yourself. I got a soul on ice, day and night and night and day. I got a soul on ice, but no feelings and no change. I got a soul on ice, and I'm frozen to the bone. I got a soul on ice, so cold, baby, so cold.
Here on WYIR 96.9, the Music Bomb, the Amusement Park Radio, Iceman Maniacs, senior writer and webmaster Michael Shockley in studio with us, and Johnny Kells of Johnny's Five Hole wandering in. What are we doing? That's all it takes.
You're totally thrown.
Where did those flying dogs and Up? Was that what it was? What was the movie?
Squirrel. Like,
Squirrel. Yeah, exactly. We got the supercomputer on, continuing to calculate Man Games lost to injury this year for the Evansville Icemen. And where are we at? 43 games into the season.
We are at 249 Man Games lost to injury and illness. We currently have 7 players out. We have also now had, we're up to 20 call-ups to the AHL involving 14 different players. So, yeah, the craziness continues. On the injury front, we do have some news from the last week of games. Sebastian Wanstrom was out sick on Wednesday and Friday, but he did return on Saturday. Anton Blomqvist pulled his groin on Friday and did not play Saturday. It sounds like that's not a terribly long-term deal, though. He may be back this weekend. And then, as mentioned earlier, Aaron Jens suffered a concussion or conky and broken nose on Saturday. So and we don't know what his status is going forward yet. So that's the injury news. On the transaction front, last Tuesday after we recorded our show, the Icemen signed rookie forward Dylan Gilbert. He was actually one of the late additions to our training camp roster and then one of our first cuts. I think he was just signed to have an extra body just in case things really went wonky.
Which they did.
Which they did. He did not dress last Wednesday against Fort Wayne. He did dress and play on Friday and Saturday. He took one shift in each game, from what I could tell. I only saw him on the ice once each night. So not exactly a difference maker, but at least he got a couple shifts in and could say that he played professional hockey for a couple nights. And I'll get to why I say that in a minute. Wednesday last week, Mark Cody came off the IR. He actually played all three games over the weekend, or in the last week. Including, he was the 10th forward on Wednesday against the Comets.
And looked a little rusty.
A little bit,
which
yeah.
is going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying he yeah. just looked, normally you see a little bit more zip, and it was like he was thinking out there a little bit maybe, or yeah. just a little bit of rust.
Yeah. He started to get a little more into it. He took a regular shift on Friday and Saturday just because of the numbers game. He was on that third line. So he looked a little bit better as time went on. Also, last Wednesday, we talked about last week, the Fort Wayne Comets had lost Brandon Marino and Jean-Michel Risque, who had been called up to the AHL. Last Wednesday, both of them were sent back down, but they weren't sent back down in time to play here on Wednesday night. But next time we see the Comets, they will be on the roster unless they get called back up. Other interesting thing last Wednesday, the Blues placed about a dozen players on NHL waivers, which would allow them to go back and forth between St. Louis and Peoria. Only one of those players was claimed, but it has an impact on the Icemen. The player that was claimed was Anthony Peluso, who had been the enforcer in Peoria. Winnipeg claimed him. So with Peluso in Winnipeg, the Rivermen might now want to keep Cody Beach long-term because they're going to need an enforcer type up there. So that may change the outlook for Beach, because I think when he got called up, the expectation was once everything settled out after NHL training camp, he would probably be returned. But with Peluso gone, now they may keep him for a while, which means either we get one less guy back than expected or we get someone else back instead of him. So we'll see how that plays out. Thursday, the Rivermen recalled Anthony Nigro, which is why Cody took a regular shift on Friday and Saturday, because Nigro was then out of the picture. It sounds like that's probably a short-term deal for depth as they sort things out after camp and all the send-downs. But we just don't know. The AHL does not have a salary cap, nor does it have a roster limit.
I did not know that.
So, yeah, I didn't know about the roster limit. I knew there was no cap, but I talked to Dave Aminion, who's the Peoria beat writer for the Rivermen, and I asked him what the AHL roster limit is. You know, how many guys do they have, and how many are we going to get back as a result? And he said they don't actually have a roster limit. So in theory, they could keep as many up as they wanted. But in practice, they won't, because you want guys to get work. There's no point in having five extra guys on your roster and have them all sit in the press box and all get paid. So you
practice, you only get... You can't skate these guys 3-4 hours a day to work on power play and shorthanded and conditioning and everything else, and then play games. And so you've got drills set up for 15 to 18 guys, maybe 20 with a couple of healthy scratches, but it's tough juggling three goalies, and it's tough juggling more than 18
than your line,
guys.
Your normal lines.
Yeah, because if you go out to Iceman practice, you'll see them, and everyone does it. You got your lines already set, and they're all wearing different colored jerseys.
Right.
And all the defensemen are wearing black jerseys. So you got your red line, your blue line, your white line, and then all the jerseys in black, and you're doing drills so that your lines are getting that work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you've got 26 guys on a roster, what a nightmare for a coaching staff.
Yeah, so there's a lot of logistical and financial reasons why they likely won't keep everybody up, but there's nothing... There's no deadline where they have to send X number of guys down in order to get under a limit. So they may keep more guys up to evaluate things for a week or two. But I think eventually we will probably end up getting one or two forwards and maybe one defenseman. I think at bare minimum we'll get one forward back. More than likely we'll probably get two or three total players. And hopefully if we get a defenseman, hopefully Brett Ponich will be the one that comes back down. But that's just... my hope. We don't know who they're going to send. The Blues might end up saying, we like what we see out of Ponich. We want him to stay in the A and force Peoria to send somebody else down, whether it be one of their own guys or a different Blues prospect. So we'll see over time. Right now, as of when we record this, nobody has been sent back down, but I'm sure that's going to change within the next week or two. Also on the Blues front, on Friday, the Blues signed veteran defenseman Wade Redden to a one-year deal worth $800,000, which we talked a little bit last week about the compliance buyouts that have been instituted post-lockout, and that the original plan was you couldn't buy somebody out until after the season, and thus guys that had gaudy contracts were just being sat so that they didn't
Scotty
get hurt.
Scotty Gomez, we talked about
right.
last week.
Well, the NHL and the NHLPA decided we don't want guys just getting sat so they can't get hurt so that they can be bought out after the season. So they came to an agreement to allow accelerated compliance buyouts. And the money, the idea was that the buyouts after this season would count against hockey-related revenue, but that money would not count toward the salary cap. Well, they agreed to do these accelerated buyouts, but if you have an accelerated buyout, now that money does count against the cap. But Montreal did agree to buy out Gomez, 2 years and $14 million, and the Rangers bought out Redden, who had 2 years and $13 million left on his deal. So with that buyout money in his pocket, he was willing to go to a contender for less money, so he signed with the Blues. The good thing is that adds more organizational depth on D, which increases the likelihood that someone like a Ponich may trickle back down to the Icemen. So
please, hockey gods, send us a defenseman.
we really need the help. I'm sure Jason Dale and Patrick Kennedy would agree with that. So we'll see what happens. Redden has not played yet. It sounds like he probably will make his Blues debut late this week, perhaps Thursday against Nashville. So whenever Redden comes to St. Louis and is able to start playing, they will send Jeff Wojwodka down to the Rivermen, and then when they do that, if Wojwodka is in Peoria, then theoretically Peoria may have an extra defenseman to send to us. So we'll see, but it's going to be a couple days before we find out what exactly is going to happen there. And I do like that signing. I think Redden is a good guy. He got branded as a bust because his contract was enormous and there were unrealistic expectations, but I think the Blues brought him in on a low enough cost that there's really low risk, and as long as they have realistic expectations, that's a good move for this organization. So good for them.
I'm not so sure. He was, I don't understand what happened to Wade Redden, but he has not played in the NHL in 4+ years.
Right.
The Rangers signed him to that monster contract.
And then they realized they way overpaid.
And which everyone knew, except Glenn Sather. I just don't understand how this guy keeps his job year after year.
Yeah, no kidding.
Granted, he coached in Gretzky and Messier and Curry and everything else, but ever since then, all he does is spend money, and it just doesn't make any sense, unless he's just doing what the owners want.
Yeah.
But Wade Redden, he has not been able to get back into that lineup. Even with that contract, he has not been able to get into that Rangers lineup, which is not stellar defense core.
No.
So now, granted, $800,000, you can't really go wrong.
Right. Well, I think part of it with the Rangers, too, was they banished him to the AHL to try to bury part of his cap hit.
Yeah.
So there was a financial reason, too. I don't necessarily know that him playing,
because they went out the
A,
next year and signed Gomez
right.
to this ridiculous deal.
Right. And then they offloaded it to Montreal. So, I don't know. I think the thing with Redden is, because they're bringing him in at such a little cost, there's really not much risk that if they try him out, and he's not expected to be a top four guy. He's going to be basically the seventh defenseman. And if he can fill in every now and then, bring a veteran presence to the locker room, cool. And if that doesn't work out, they can always send him to Peoria and call Wojwodka back up. So one way or the other, if nothing else, it adds to the depth on D. So, and that's something that perhaps was the biggest concern about the Blues. They got a ton of depth on forward, and they're great in net. And the one thing was, did they need to add another defenseman or two? And that takes a step toward that.
I haven't seen Redden play since he's been banished in the AHL for 4 years. But I think off the top of my head, I'd rather have Wojwodka than Redden.
Maybe. Maybe. And we'll see. You know, they may get him in and they may have him in practice for 2 or 3 weeks and come to that same conclusion. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
So back to our Iceman. Where are we actually at? We've got seven on the IR.
We are at actually, right now, only five are on the IR.
Okay.
I think five are on the IR. But
depending on what Aaron Jens' status
right.
is over this
Jens
week.
Jens is not on the IR. Blomqvist is not on the IR. But Jens may have to go on the IR depending on the prognosis. So we'll see with that. Finishing out the transactions, there were no moves on Saturday or Sunday. And then on Monday, I mentioned Dylan Gilbert earlier. Well, he was released on Monday. So his stint was limited to two shifts in two games, and now he's gone again. So that's all the transactions through through Monday. We're currently at 18 players on the active roster, and both of our reserve spots are empty. So we can add up to four players from IR and or affiliate send-downs without having to cut anyone. So it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe Aaron Jens goes to IR. That opens up another spot. It sounds like Jim McKenzie will come back, according to Patafi. And it sounds like Oliver Gabriel and Phil Plant are getting close. But
They are skating. I don't know if they are close.
I still don't expect them until February. But we'll see with them. So I think McKenzie will come back, which he'll basically take the spot Gilbert just vacated. And then the question will be how many guys get sent down.
But can McKenzie take that spot? Because he's a veteran.
Yes, he can, because Matt Jens is a veteran. He's on IR.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about his hip.
Right. So our three...
It's hard to keep track of. We need a board in the studio. Yeah.
We currently only have three veterans on the active roster. Todd, Kenny Baker, as you like to say.
Kenny Baker, RTD2.
And Dan Tatro. So we do have room to activate a veteran. So McKenzie can be off IR and playing on a regular basis until Matt Jens comes back, if he comes back. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out over the next week or two. I think there's still going to be more moves. And with the compressed NHL schedule, 48 games in 99 days, the Blues may make some moves with low-end guys over the course of the season just to filter guys in and out of the roster and keep guys fresh. So I think the craziness has just begun.
Yes, indeed.
So anytime, 24/7, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click the red graphic with the handicap symbols. That'll take you to the Maniac message board. Scroll to the end there, and the updated roster is there.
Very good. You want to talk about the Ford Center Ice. We had a blackout, 2-second blackout on Saturday night, and still some more ice issues out there. They continue to struggle. I watched it Wednesday night, leaving snow turds everywhere, the Zamboni. Yeah. You just never see it in the NHL. Yeah. Two Zamboni system, which the NHL came up with because they want the Zambonis to go slow, but they want the ice done as fast as possible so it can set up quickly for safety reasons, for speed of the game. And you got that knucklehead honking his horn and going twice as fast. It's amazing how the first Zamboni goes out, and then he goes out behind it, and he catches it in the first corner like it's NASCAR or something. Like he's the Intimidator come again, the Zamboni version. But yeah, they're struggling.
Yeah, there's issues. Like you said, there were more issues on Wednesday. I think it was the second period. The start of the period was delayed by ice issues. We've talked about it before, and you know that's why Todd Robinson hurt his knee.
I do know from Matty Space, Super Linesman, who's coming into town this Saturday.
Man crush.
We got to do the double date thing because his wife's coming, so we're going to pretend.
You and Matt and then your wives together?
That's usually how we try to work it by the end of the night. But enough of that. They are now mandated, and I will verify whether this is through all the leagues or just Evansville, but after in the second period intermission, they are required by the ECHL to now fill out a ICE report.
Really?
And that was added in the last month.
Interesting.
Yes. So they have to
give it. Is that everywhere or just here?
That's what I'm going to find out the next time I talk to them. But I know that here, after two periods, they have to fill out. And they never had to do it for the...
What are the conditions?
Yep.
Very interesting.
The old CHL had a rule that the official scorer, anytime there was a period intermission that was longer than 18 minutes, they were supposed to file a report with the league. Mm-hmm. That explained why there was a long one, and I don't know if the ECHL has anything like that or not.
The intermission is supposed to be 18 minutes long, and anytime you go over 18 minutes, for any reason, it's supposed to be documented. Now, if there's unforeseen circumstances, a Zamboni breaks down or something, the team doesn't get docked for that.
Right.
But if it's because you take too long with on-ice promotions, and then it takes forever for the ice to set up, then yeah, the league has a problem with that. And you can be granted up to five or six extensions per season, but you have to file for those in advance. And that's put on the clock. Sometimes you'll see the intermission will be extended to 23 minutes, and you can only go an extra five. So
most
that's
of the time,
the limit.
Steven Habler turns the clock off. at about the 6 minute mark.
Well, and yeah, and that's how it used to be done back in the day before leagues were more concerned about the length of games.
That
overall.
Was last year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I mean, back in the day, they would do that where if the Zamboni was running slow, they would just pause the clock at 6 minutes or something, wait till it got almost done, then restart it. Well, now you're not allowed to do that anymore. At least you're not supposed to do that. But anyway, about the ice, one thing I did want to mention that I think was interesting on the topic of promotions taking too long is that the Iceman organization can do a lot to help by making sure that the on-ice activities are shorter. And to that effect, I saw a note, and I think it was on TSN, where they were talking about the little things that are buried in the new CBA that the NHL has post-lockout. And I thought it was interesting. The NHL now actually has a clause in the new CBA that limits on-ice promotions during intermissions to 4 minutes. So when the clock starts at 18 minutes, that intermission is 18 minutes long, you have to have everyone off the ice and Zamboni on by 14 on the clock. And the big difference is, next time you're in an Iceman game, look at what the clock is at when the Zamboni comes out. Because a lot of times, especially the second intermission with Chuck-a-Puck, Zamboni's not even coming on the ice until 9 or 10 minutes left in the intermission. So that's a big difference when you have just less time. And sometimes part of the reason the Zamboni operators are flying around the ice is because they have no choice. Now, granted, they can do other things. They don't necessarily take the right lines. They flood it way too much given the conditions. There are a lot of things that could be fixed and improved upon there, but I thought that was really interesting that the NHL, they fine-tuned the operation to that extent that there's even a limit on how long your promotions can be. That's perhaps something the lower-level leagues need to look at, too.
Well, and it depends. The NHL makes $3.3 billion a
That's
season.
True.
And if the ECHL and the CHL are going to allow their franchises to do as much on-ice promotion to get more butts in the seat, you may see a little bit more leeway there.
Right,
I will. We'll wait and see how this one trickles down.
Yeah, but who knows? Maybe the ice condition report is a precursor to something like that. We'll see. But the main reason I wanted to bring up this and the CBA note actually just ties into it is we found out over the last week that VenueWorks, the company that manages the Ford Center, has announced and scheduled Championship Arena Ice Racing, which
it looks really cool.
It does look pretty cool, I gotta admit. If you haven't seen the ads, it's motorcycles and quads racing on the hockey rink with steel studded tires. And this event is going to be Saturday, February 23rd. The next Iceman home game after that is on Thursday, the 28th. So there's only 5 days between events. So it's going to be interesting to see the condition of the ice for that game on the 28th. Supposedly, and this is according to the sanctioning body of the ice racing, supposedly damage to the ice is minimal, and with normal care, it will return to its normal state shortly thereafter the event. But our ice stinks to begin with, so it's going to be interesting to see how torn up it is for that game on the 28th.
I don't think our ice stinks. Our ice has problems. I skated on it in December when I reffed that hockey game after the Iceman game, and it was a little soft, like it was too warm.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
a
problem.
A
they don't
soft.
I don't think they keep it cool enough.
But I did not notice any problems skating. And really? That was the night when the label came through the ice. So I think part of it, now granted, right before Thanksgiving when Todd Robinson tweaked his knee, that ice was horrible. I mean, there was chunks missing at the blue line. That was ridiculous. But in December when I skated on it, it wasn't that not bad to affect play, at least at my level. So it's not good.
You have a level?
Swander, yes, I do have a level. I also have a level of tolerance, and you're coming very close to it. But Swander is definitely by far the best ice. It's so cold over there. It is so solid. They do such a good job. They overflood it on purpose because they don't have to have it set up in 5 minutes. And that ice at Ford Center should be overflooded when the games are over.
Yeah,
they should
give it time to set up really well.
But so, yeah, and we can get Bill Nadeau, super manager of Swander Ice Arena, on sometimes if we really want the lowdown on everything that's being missed over at the Ford Center. Because you sit a game with him, he goes, he's anal retentive about the condition of his ice, and he freaks out because he just sees everything that's going wrong that even my eyes don't even catch.
Hmm.
But Yep.
Very
interesting.
Interesting. Yep. If there's ever a week that Patafi can't make it on, you should have him on instead.
Yeah, but he also drinks the coffee house out of coffee when he's here, so he's kind of high maintenance. Of course, he did just repair a bunch of rivets in my skate as well, so payback, baby. Watching warm-ups.
Something I wanted to mention just kind of for the benefit of newer listeners on this show, we try to not only analyze Iceman hockey for the diehards, but also talk about the game in a way that helps new fans understand the game a little better and little things that they may not have picked up on. So for a lot of our listeners, this probably is nothing new, but for newer people, perhaps this will perk up your ears a little bit. Just wanted to say, when you come to an Iceman game, arrive early and watch the pregame warm-ups. Not only is it a lot of fun to see the different things that they do, the different drills, but you can actually figure out that night's lineup by watching warm-ups. This past Saturday, we knew that Blomqvist was going to be out. So the question was, what would the D pairings be? Would Dale drop back to D? And also, how would Crom shuffle the forward lines? Well, you could tell exactly the answers to those questions by just watching the breakout drill, which is when everybody starts in the neutral zone and one of the forwards dumps the puck down but beyond the goal line. They all go in, the defensemen retrieve the puck, and then they break out. And by watching that, you can tell what the D pairings are and also what the forward lines are going to be. So just by watching the breakout drill on Saturday, I knew that Jason Dale was going to be on D with Tatro. I knew that Kennedy was going to be on D with Aaron Jens. I knew that Nathan Moon was staying at center, which he had moved to on Friday. And I knew that Dylan Clark was moving back to center, and I could tell who the wings were going to be for each of those guys. So that's something you can basically predict the lineup just by watching warm-ups, even if the lineup has changed from the previous game. Also with warm-ups, if you get there early enough, whoever the starting goaltender is going to be is the guy who leads the team out of the locker room. And if you're not there early enough for the starter warm-ups, you can still tell the goalie at the end of warm-ups, because when they do that bombshell drill where all 18 guys surround the net and try to score on the goalie 18-on-1, which is slightly unfair if you ask me,
I don't care about goalies one bit.
I enjoy watching that drill, though. It's always fun because it's 18-on-1, and when they finally do score, they act like they just won the Stanley Cup. But if you watch that drill, whichever goalie takes that drill is the backup that night. The starter never takes that drill. So if you're new to the game and you want to show off your hockey smarts to other fans, watch the warm-ups, and you can predict the lineup. You can say X is going to play center, and his wings are going to be these guys, and this is going to be the starting goalie. And if you've got new fans with you, they'll be impressed by your party skills. So there you go.
My favorite last year watching warm-ups, I think it was Quad City, but I'm not sure. But a guy fired a shot. You should always shoot the puck when the goalie sees you, because you're warming up the goalie.
Right.
And you're getting warm yourself. You're not trying to score goals because, again, it's not for the Stanley Cup.
Right.
Well, Knucklehead, there was a mishandle on one of the rush drills. And so the goalie turned to the other side of the ice to face the next upcoming line. Well, he fired it at the goalie and shot it right off of his knee.
Ooh.
And the goalie dropped in the crease like a ton of bricks. And right there, I knew he's not playing. So the starter's down for the night. And sure enough, he couldn't go.
Ooh.
And the Iceman came out and lit up the backup. So there's always interesting things like that, too. And I'm sure that center forward got a talking to. But they're knuckleheads as well, so... Defenseman.
I think we've just decided that everyone is a knucklehead except defenseman, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we were both defensemen, and we're far from knuckleheads.
Exactly. And we got our own radio show.
Exactly.
Because we are the intelligentsia of the hockey world.
Is that a word?
I can't even spell it.
IT.
IT. Something. Yes. Bonus Shockers Hockey Rocks Song of the Week.
This is a really quick one. It's only like 20 or 30 seconds. But this is in honor of our friend Jennifer Watts. Today is her birthday. So in honor of her, this is from a couple years ago from Iceman Live when her boy Nicholas Lindberg was the guest on the show. This is Nicholas Lindberg singing Happy Birthday in Swedish.
Yo mon leva, yo mon leva, yo mon leva. Jag visst ska hon leva, jag visst ska hon leva, jag visst ska hon leva ut i hundrade år. Fifa ditt leve, hipp hipp, hurra, 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 hurra.
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
And we are back. Iceman Insights, Michael Shockley, the Dirty D, Wednesday afternoon. Unfortunately, no Wednesday night game. That was nice. Staying downtown, doing a radio show, getting a little grub at Reroz or one of the local establishments, heading over to the Ford Center to watch some hockey. I am a huge proponent of Wednesday night hockey.
You like hump day hockey?
Wow. But actually, tonight I have to referee two of the high school games.
Oh man, there will be hockey. I would have thought you would be out in Loveland, Colorado by now to referee the All-Star game.
You would think that. But
and
no.
Then I would stop drinking.
Yes. Of all the games to do, that would probably be the one, because I'm sure you don't have to worry about too much.
That's true, yeah.
The linesman will work harder in that one than the ref will.
Very much so. Put the whistle in the pocket.
We got some Iceman trivia?
Yes. And this might be one you could get. We'll see. Unlike last week when I stumped you. During the first Iceman AHA season, the Iceman had six different goalies. Which of these six finished the season with the lowest goals against average?
I will even
make it multiple choice for you, because you probably couldn't remember half of their names if you didn't.
That's what I was just looking at the end of the list here. I don't remember those two.
Yes, the six goalies that season were Matt Wagner, Dave DeSander, Reed Sifford, Kira Hurley, Justin Grant, and Jared Condon.
And we know Reed Sifford had a fight.
We do, yes. Reed Sifford had a
fight. Only because of trivia from 3 weeks ago.
Yes, and DeSander had a fight too. But out of those six, Wagner, DeSander, Sifford, Hurley, Grant, and Condon, which one finished the season with the lowest goals against?
I am going to guess Dave DeSander. Darn it.
Would you like to try a second guess?
Not really, because three of these guys I don't even remember. So at this point, it's just... Who is Justin Grant?
I think he only played like two games.
Okay.
I think that was because Wagner played the whole season, and Sifford started the season as the backup. And then when Sifford left, I think they cycled a couple people in and out before they settled on DeSander. And then late in the season, they signed Kira, and they carried three goalies the rest of the season.
Yep.
It's frightening that I remember this stuff.
A little bit. It's a little disturbing.
A little bit, isn't it? The answer is...
Do I tell my goalie story while we give people time to think about it?
They'll just look it up online. They'll cheat like you did.
Why? I've never
cheated. Not today.
I've never cheated. I just couldn't remember a guy's name. Yeah, I remembered everything about him on the back of his hockey
card.
That's
cheating.
I still can't remember his name, though I know he's from the Maine Black Bears.
Matt Lundin.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, the answer to this goalie trivia question is Kira Hurley.
Really?
Yes. She ended up the season, she had a 4.99 goals against in two games played. And yes, that was the best on the team.
Wow. Everyone has to remember, if you weren't around in the AHA days, it was not exactly the best coached, best disciplined, best organized hockey you've ever seen.
Yeah, you lose 7-4 and 13-2 and things like that.
Yes.
So, 4.99 goals against average was the best on the team. Wagner was... 587. DeSander was a 593. The other three
was close.
Yeah. The other three, Sifford, Grant, and Condon, were all over 8. Wags did have the best save percentage at 885. Kira's was 829. So
885 is pretty impressive for that league.
Yeah, in that league, that's pretty good. He got there were nights when he was facing 45, 50 shots back-to-back nights.
Yep.
So I think he was the best goalie on that team, no doubt. But Kira had the best goals against average, and part of that is because I think all the time she saw was against the Chicago Blaze.
Did she only play two games?
Yeah, she started one, I believe, and then she was a backup.
Now, which is the game that she got into the Hall of Fame for getting the assist?
That was in the 24-4 victory over Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she got the assist on like goal number 19 or something in that total blowout. So.
Was that the Blaze?
Yeah.
That was when the team had already fallen apart, and they were just throwing men's league guys on there just to make that trip.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I think they had about 8 players, and the rest of them were men's league guys that they were filling in. But Kira Hurley, number one goals against average in that inaugural Iceman season.
I'm sure Steven Rickards, the man with the golden voice, I'm sure his testicles just had a little twitch there just because we brought up that name.
Still a big
Kira.
This is our last Hurley show fan. Now. We'll see you. This is the third time in about a month and a half we've mentioned Steven Rickards' testicles.
Well, and we haven't gotten kicked off the air, so I just figured it was part of the shtick now.
That's true, yeah.
So.
The Steven Rickards' testicles line of the week. Which brings us to...
Rapid fire. Go, quick.
No, we skipped the best part.
Sorry.
The Brian Patafi tweet of the week.
Can we do one if he is suspended? Is he suspended from all activities?
I think we have to still. He's not suspended, though. We just got a misconduct.
We don't know if he's suspended or not.
That's true.
I guess it'll depend if he shows up here in the next 15 minutes.
If he showed up 15 minutes ago.
Or if he showed up 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Depending on how it all plays out.
Yes. The Brian Patafi tweet of the week, as we said last week, you can follow Iceman Athletic Trainer and Potty Mouth Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi. That's B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. A few weeks ago, he tweeted the following, quote, "My daughter asked me why I became an athletic trainer 35 years ago. I said because I had no talent. Today, I could be a Kardashian."
How about that?
Yeah, end quote. That's pretty good.
I've been trying to see if he's been tweeting ever since the game misconduct, and I haven't been able to find anything, though.
I think he tweeted, but not about it.
Yeah.
He's minding his own beeswax before his review with the league.
Rapid fire.
Like we mentioned earlier, tonight is the ECHL All-Star Game out in Loveland, Colorado, and from the time last week's show aired to now, we've found out that Brad Perkins will not be the Iceman's only representative, because Nathan Moon is one of 10 fill-ins for All-Stars who were called up to the AHL. So Moon is going to be in the All-Star game tonight. And there was a lot of questions after that was announced. Why him instead of Josh Beaulieu? Well, big credit to Booster Club President Dixie Halber, because she found a story from the Loveland Reporter Herald out of Loveland, Colorado, about the All-Star game. And in that story, ECHL Commissioner Brian McKenna came out and freely admitted that the All-Star roster is not necessarily about having the best players or the top scorers. In fact, only 4 out of the top 20 scorers in the league are in the All-Star game this year. McKenna said the roster for the All-Star game is more about including future stars who they believe can advance to the next level. So essentially, rather than an All-Star game, it's really more of a showcase game. So the guys that they think can move up, that NHL scouts will be more interested in seeing. So because of that, you're going to see, all other things being equal, guys that are under NHL or AHL contract are more likely to be picked over guys that aren't. And that's the case here. Beaulieu has better stats, but Moon is an AHL contracted player. So there you go.
And that's why I say Moon needs to be signed for next year,
yeah,
along with Dylan Clark.
Yeah.
Other rapid fire. Guess who just walked into our studio? Kelly Miller, All-State.
Not the Kelly Miller that that got signed by an ECHL team, though.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was Reading. One of the teams signed a player named Kelly Miller. Elmira
Jackals. Are you going to get their jersey? Wear it to Iceman games with Miller on the back?
Yeah.
You could get like his bio picture and Photoshop your face into it. Ah,
right.
Nice. See? Puck. Oh, yeah. Take a penalty. That last penalty is on Kelly Miller.
Yeah.
Brought to you by
my idea.
Kelly Miller,
like,
All-State.
I want him to just send the puck out of play, and the stoppage by Kelly Miller.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Kelly Miller, we don't have a studio microphone, so that was just a lot of dead air when you were telling us this story, so
that's
I'm going to have to clip you.
There's a lot of dead air. There's a lot of dead air with Benigni, too. So
it's just the way it is.
Stop and think about things.
Anyways, we roll in big company on this show.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
People just coming down to the Ware Coffee House on 4th Street just to be a part, just to watch the studio.
We got Johnny Kells, we got Kelly Miller, and we got Manti's girlfriend all in the house.
And Ivy.
And Ivy is here.
Though Barbie Fairytopia is more important than the show today, so no climbing all over you or anything.
At least she's got her priorities. And we're other rapid-fire things, I wanted to seek your prediction for the Stanley Cup. I'm going on record as picking the Blues over the Rangers.
I am anti-regular season Stanley Cup predictions because I think they're just guesses.
That's what mine is, too, and it's sure to be wrong.
So I can go ahead and say the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Nashville Predators because they're my two favorite teams as well. So that's mine. But now, when the playoffs start, those 2 days before the playoffs start, if you want to join the Derek Benigni Bracket Club, where you pick out your brackets and
see how I match
and
up.
And see how you match up with the Masters.
Interesting.
Then you can definitely do that because it's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
To try to predict. And that's, you've got 14 teams out of the running already.
Right.
And still try to predict a Stanley Cup winner. It isn't that easy. And I will guarantee you, no one last year predicted the 8th seeded LA Kings would win the Stanley Cup. I don't think anyone in the group predicted them to come out of the first round. Whew. So there
so,
you go.
So there you go. I'm picking Blues over Rangers, and Derek is taking the
and who's
Leafs
your favorite
over
team?
The Preds. Blues are my favorite
there
team.
There you go.
But I'll tell you this. I have never once actually picked them to win the Stanley Cup. I actually think they have a legitimate shot this year because that's a good team, and they're deep, and they've got goaltending, and will be. But the Rangers are the same way. So.
I've predicted the Maple Leafs every year since 1991.
Yeah, how's that worked out for you?
Exactly.
Final thing in rapid fire I wanted to mention for talking about new fans. If you want to learn something about a coach's mindset, go to NashvillePredators.com and watch videos from Barry Trotz. He is the Preds head coach. He's been there since they were an expansion team. Trotz is an open book. He is a great interview. I love watching him talk about hockey. He's very open. He's entertaining. He's got a very dry sense of humor, but you can learn a lot from him. If you watch the videos they post, like his post-game press conferences and stuff on Preds TV. And it's a lot of stuff that you can pick up about the game that you may not otherwise know. I watched, they did a media session with him before training camp started, and I thought a couple really interesting things he said, things that concerned him. He said, one, special teams. He said guys that normally would play power play and penalty kill, he was not going to have them do both because of the compressed schedule. That's something that NHL-level coaches think about, things like that. But you don't want guys to get overly drained by playing both ends of special teams plus even strength. And also, something that has nothing to do with the on-the-ice, well, kind of. He said that one of the most difficult things about getting back into the swing of things after the lockout would be keeping his voice. He's talking about how in practice, you, because of the noise on the ice and 20 guys and skates and pucks, you have to yell a lot during practice. And he said, I haven't screamed at anybody in 8 months. It's going to take time for my voice. So I'm going to have to ration out my voice over the next few weeks so that I don't lose my voice by the end of the week.
They yell at players?
Yeah.
Wow. It's,
yeah. They don't give out participation medals either. So just something I always enjoy. The Preds are my second favorite team as with you. And Barry Trotz, even though he has no neck, is a really,
I was going there too.
He's a really interesting listen. I was telling Amanda the other night, I've convinced myself that the reason why he has no neck is because they haven't won the cup yet. That if Nashville ever wins the Stanley Cup, all of a sudden his head will pop out of his body and he'll gain 3 inches in height. But anyway, he is a very interesting guy, very funny, really an open book. A lot of NHL coaches and a lot of professional coaches in general are just very secretive and they don't want to talk about things. But I think he gets that Nashville is a non-traditional market, and in order to grow the market, he has to kind of help teach the game to new fans. And he does a really good job of communicating with the fans, unlike a lot of coaches. So if you're new to the game, go to NashvillePredators.com and watch his post-game videos because they're really interesting.
Upcoming games. If you missed last week, Fort Wayne, since Toledo and Kalamazoo, you get to see most of them again here. Yeah. Cincinnati, Fort Wayne, and Toledo.
Yeah, three more divisional games.
Three.
Only one of them is at home, though. The Icemen, first off tonight, as we mentioned before, is the All-Star game. And then Friday, the Icemen go to Cincinnati. They come home on Saturday, play the Comets, and then they go back to Ohio on Sunday to play Toledo. That home game against the Comets, the Russian Bar Trio will be here.
Which is awesome.
It's really cool. I had never heard of them. I guess they were on America's Got Talent or something.
Yeah, I actually saw that and was blown away and then didn't realize it until I saw them this year on the ice. I'm like, I saw that.
I don't watch that show. So
I don't either.
I had never seen them, and then when we saw them last year, I was really impressed. It's really cool. So if you've never seen them, you need to come see it.
And you've got to see it because it's very difficult to try to take a photograph of it with your cell phone.
Yeah.
It's just,
they move
timing
too fast.
Wise, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, you think you're getting the girl up in the midair and she's down on the bar.
Yeah, every time. I get the pictures to prove it.
Yeah. Also, that game against the Comets will be the first time this season the Icemen will have worn the dark blue jerseys at home because they do the ECHL does the jersey switch at the All-Star break.
CHL just did their switch.
Yep. It is the next to last visit by the Comets this season, and it's the last time they come on a Saturday. The only other home game left against the Comets is Friday, February 15th, and it's going to be a good crowd, too. I checked on Monday, and there were only a couple hundred lower bowl seats left, and they have opened the entire upper bowl for $10 tickets. And it's almost entirely still available. So if you want cheap tickets,
and Maddie Spaeth will be, and we always win with Maddie Spaeth.
Yes, the man crush is coming, and that means we're going to beat the Comets. So we'll get some revenge for last Wednesday's loss.
And then Sunday at Toledo, crappy bus ride.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. You're home Saturday night, and then you got to go all the way to Toledo for a 4 o'clock start.
It's been a while since we've done the 3-3. So
yeah, especially where you've got a road trips. Then it's a sandwich: road game, home game, road game. That's tough.
Final thoughts.
Well, I just wanted to thank Manti's girlfriend for joining us. Thankfully, she's not very talkative. We this show would be 4 hours if she was talking as much as we do.
Say something nice to your mom for me.
Wow. Also, I have to mention, we haven't gotten in. You got to tell your naked goalie story.
At this point, it's just kind of overrated. But I was reffing. I did ref very well Saturday in that Pee Wee House game. Oh, and we also need to make bologna. I did. That was a good ref game. And not to mention Jennifer Watson, needed to throw her under the bus. She went and assistant coached, helped out Derek Masterson. Too many men on the ice. We got to give her too many men. So it's a little difficult getting behind that bench.
Yeah. You're just lucky Brian Patafi wasn't on the bench. Yeah. He cussed you out for that.
Only if he was on the other bench. Well, we did call it.
Yeah.
But now I did not call after four games in a row, that C-League game that I did Sunday night at 10 o'clock, that one, or 8:30 to 10, that one was not. I had 3 and 10 to blows.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, you're pretty good at blowing.
Which is more than in my whole marriage. But anyways, after the game, Brian Vall was a B-League goalie, and he used my locker room. I was told he was in my locker room taking a shower, so then you get all excited because, like, you know, you got a goalie.
You get excited showering. About Brian Vall in the shower.
Yeah, and so I ran in there, and he was already gone, used my soap, and I didn't get to see any goalie in a towel or any goalie jiggle or anything like that. So it was pretty depressing.
I don't know that I want to see Brian Vall jiggle.
You just got to see it to believe it. That's all I'm saying.
I'll take your word for it. But that, speaking of goalies, we always talk about how weird goalies are. Fun story about a goalie. Several years ago when we were at Swander, the AAHL All-Star Game when the Iceman hosted it. In the middle, I think it was in the skills competition, or it might have been during the game itself. My wife Amanda was scorekeeping down in the box next to Mr. Rickard. And at some point, one of the goalies brought over a banana and stuck it into the hole in the scorekeeper's box. So she likes to tell the story now about how a goalie put a banana in her.
Wow!
Yeah.
We are just pushing the limits here.
The hole in the glass.
The hole in the glass. Oh, my goodness. Did you have something you wanted to say,
Ivy?
No, I had something I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
No.
She doesn't want to ask it on the air.
All right. So we got to take care of this. So
I guess we're going to wrap this up.
Yep. Daddy's got to go to work. Are you going to say your line?
Take us out, man.
You have been listening to Iceman Insights. Why
you're
we
still
don't
thinking
know,
about Brian Vall in the shower, aren't you?
Come on. Is it hot in here? Is it just me? Iceman Insights every Wednesday afternoon, 1 o'clock.
Unless they cancel us.
Which is a good potential. But anyways, we're here every Wednesday. He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster, and vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans. You can check out all of his work on IcemanManiacs.com, the best hockey website covering the Evansville Icemen in the Tri-State. And you listen to Iceman Insights, the longest one-hour hockey show in America.
We will see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.